This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Although, it's, have you guys seen, I'm so sorry. Have you guys seen Spice?
No, you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm relishing these last few minutes that we have together. You guys seen Spicy Potter?
No.
Like, it's Harry Potter, like, but it's like 3D animations that people have done.
No. Uh-uh. Oh, is that where...
When like, I make my move, you're free to check the king.
No, you can't.
I have seen this.
He's got to sacrifice himself.
The dances
that they have, like they program the little characters to do, are all K-pop dances.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. I was what? Like, yeah. I it's so funny the way they're talking.
No, you can't.
That's you're good. Free to check the king.
Not me.
No, Rod. No.
Not you, Harry. You.
He's gonna sacrifice himself. Gets me every time.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and hog mama, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Jane, CEO of Save International, and I sell the best damn printers and all-in-one machines Korea can make. Pleased to meet you.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Guys, beef is ready for dinner. I do. I want some man meat.
Every week.
Well, then my man meat he shall have.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll be talking about character intros and outros, exits. Then we'll head into the conference room for some New Year's talk, what we'd like to leave in 2023 and bring into 2024.
Mm-hmm.
As well as a special report from a listener of ours who went to some live office events. So that'll be great. Before we get into all that, any housekeeping to start off with, Alex?
Wow, I'm caught off surprise. I forgot about this segment.
What is the meaning of this?
The main one I want to talk about is just yesterday, 2 days ago, if you're listening to this, we released... our second episode of Capped Up Audience. This one is on
the Cap Odd.
I'm
from the future. I'll be back.
Terminator.
It's the Terminator. The 1984 James Cameron classic. Boy, we had a lot of fun doing this when we were in person for it. So check that out. And I put a little note in that episode, but a reminder to everyone here, you will see the first three episodes popping up in this feed, in our main Michael Scott pod feed. Mm-hmm. After those first three episodes, then episodes will be in its own separate feed, as it already is. You can go subscribe to the Captive Audience, its own separate thing. So please do that to stay in touch with the show. Again, we'll put one more episode in the main feed, but be ready to dock the other ship.
Should be Roger Rabbit in a couple.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which I have never seen. I know,
yes.
I know absolutely nothing so about this
excited.
Movie other than that there's animated characters with real people. That is literally the only thing I know about it.
Yeah, that is so perfect.
I'll be watching that for the first time. Join us. And then, I know, we sat down. I went out with Edwin and Sean, and we got some drinks and made a list.
Yeah.
We just went through and like talked about which movies have you seen and haven't. So we got a pretty darn good list going. I don't know if there's some highlights we want to tease.
Edwin said we're good for the year.
Yeah, exactly.
We got
tons. Keep our cadence with what we got, and then you know if we mix in some of the other ideas we've had about responding to movies that come out throughout the year, movies that are popular in pop culture, things that we love and want to share with each other.
Yeah,
like the maybe hidden gems or something like that. We are definitely set for the year.
And then the other thing too is we don't have a set timetable for this, but be ready, because at some point we will sort of transition into, like, maybe our office episodes aren't coming out quite as frequently as we do more captive audience. Mm-hmm. This will sort of, I think this year, part of this year will be a long transition from this show into some other stuff that we're doing. Because let's face it, guys, we have mined the office mountain. We have strip mined that thing down to rubble.
Yeah.
The show's not going away. We still have plenty to talk about. But
Four more years.
But just know that episodes might not be as frequent. We will be supplementing. We will still have weekly content coming out, whether it's here or captive audience. We will still have our exclusive Patreon episodes. Those are going nowhere.
Yeah.
Speaking of Patreon, you can join that, where we'll also be trickling in some other stuff from maybe not necessarily office things
throughout. Kind of.
So, think of the Patreon is just like not strictly the office content. It's sort of just a Patreon for us.
Yeah.
That you can come hang out with us, come be a part of something bigger than yourself.
Nice.
You check that out, patreon.com/MichaelScott. Get in the Discord. It's hot right now. Mm. We got some new members who got, gifted memberships over the holidays. Cool. So it's a good time. Good time to be a tot. Good time to be a fan of movies as well.
I'll just say, too, our store, mspcstore.com, is
heard of
it. It's been working pretty good, but I just want to say, sorry and thank you for your patience to some people who have messaged us. I am working to figure out some issues that we've had. So it's just a new store, and we're just trying to figure it out. So thank you for your patience.
Christmas 2002.
We will take care
of it.
It'll
be ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really ironing it out. Really appreciate everyone who's
ordered. Sean has to hand paint every mug and fire it in the kiln.
He is getting worked to the bone over here.
Hand delivering, too, yeah.
He's
taking a little.
He's been on flights for 3 weeks straight.
There's got to be a better way.
I got my eyes open.
Let's get into today's episode. Edwin, can you please explain character intros and exits?
I would love to. So
does this have to do with New Year's?
Believe it or not, yes it does.
Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year's to all our tots and listeners. I don't know if we're at the end of the Larry David window where it is appropriate to still say Happy New Year, but
I like saying it in like March.
Yeah,
and just the first time I see a friend for the first time I see someone that year, I will say it, even if I don't see someone till August.
So if you haven't seen someone for a really long time, you want to catch them double off guard.
Oh, I'll give them 3 years. Yeah. I go, Happy New Year's 2020. Mm-hmm. Happy New Year's 2021. Mm-hmm.
It's nice to open with a happy birthday.
Sure. Right. Then I do the happy birthdays.
Yeah. Happy belated Easter.
I hit President's Day. I hit Flag Day. Mm-hmm. All the big ones.
It's a good bit.
We're starting off the year right on track. And so going into this episode, one idea that we've had, we've talked about the openings to different seasons and kind of in this New Year thing, we want to talk about character intros and departures. So a lot of times with New Year's resolutions, there's something you want to start doing or something you kind of want to leave behind in the in the last year. So in that kind of spirit, we're going to talk about what happens when characters join the office and how it changes that dynamic within the show. And then also kind of as they leave or as they exit and how that changes things as well. Because the Scranton staff takes many shapes and forms over 9 seasons. And a lot of them have to do with a lot of the big seismic changes have to do with characters coming in and out.
Great idea, Dwight.
So there we go. I think the biggest change, and I should mention up front, we're not going to try to like catch every single one. So there might be some that we miss. It's not intentional or not that we're trying to ignore a character coming in and out. Because, for example, like a character like Ryan goes in and out a few times. Ed Helms goes in and out a few times. But
the central cast that we meet in season one and then is there through the finale. Like, we're not really going to talk about a lot of them because we'll save that for the finale. Mm-hmm. But there's many characters outside of that core that come and go and change the show. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there are some really big ones, like a character like Eddie Bernard, for example. And I think, like, season three is probably a really good place to start. So, season three...
We are blowing the roof off!
We see Andy, Karen, a little bit of Martin Nash, Hannah Smotrich Barr, Josh Porter to some extent. But, like, Pepperoni, I mean, the big Tony. Ones are Andy and Karen. And like, you think about
Hannah's baby.
And we get their first intros in Gay Witch Hunt. But then in the merger, when they come in, they become part of the Scranton staff. It's like, how does Andy Bernard change the office? Like, so much, especially with, like, his intro with Dwight and with Michael and everything. Like, I guess of those season three characters, maybe let's start with Andy.
Sure.
Like, how does Andy change the show when he comes in? You know?
I mean, it's just like, isn't it just like what Bob Vance says? I can't believe you deal with that moron and that other moron and that new moron.
He says jackass, but yeah, yes, jackass, you're right on. Right. You're right on. Yeah. He means Michael Dwight and Andy. Oh, I know.
Yeah, yeah. It's it really is. You know, he perfects the pyramid of idiocracy. He adds a new dimension to. Dealing with an irritating coworker,
right?
I think because neither Michael or Dwight are spoiled. I mean, maybe Michael is a bit of a child, but I think there's a bit of that's an element of Andy that's nice. Mm. And then his whole kind of frat vibe as well. You don't get that with Michael and Dwight.
Where you go to school, Mike? Let's go.
Let's go. Yeah, there's with Dwight there, it's very much a balance to Dwight specifically. It feels like when they came up with Ed Helms, or they came up with Andy's character and Ed Helms, the way Ed Helms plays it. Yeah, it's this sort of Ivy League. I mean, you can't get more opposite than Dwight, yet they are both total suck ups to Michael. Like, they definitely are. They brown nose. They try and do what they can to be in the innermost of circles. Mm-hmm. They have very different ways of doing this. I think Dwight is much more genuine. And he's the way he does it is through proving himself with hard work and being available, and he's never late, and he's a good worker, and that's how he sort of prides himself. Versus Andy is much more like, I'll use the boys' club to do this. We're gonna hang out. We're gonna get drinks. We're gonna talk about chicks. We're gonna. Right. He's very much like this Ivy League college version of Dwight. He has no, he has no land. He has no skills. he has none of those things.
Sure.
Right. That Dwight does. So he's this great foil for Dwight because, like, Jim doesn't care about the job. Jim cares about, you know, making fun of Dwight. He cares about Pam.
Yeah.
So they need this sort of someone else who cares about what's going on in the office a lot and trying to climb the ladder. Because no one else in that office does it except Dwight. And so to me, he's this perfect kind of foil to Dwight. And they only meant for him to be there one season. So I think that's why his character changes is, like, I don't think Andy Bernard could have burned that hot for much longer than season three. Cause he is dialed up, right? I mean, leading to the punch in the wall, literally. So, yeah. When he comes in, this sort of nice balance of, he kind of upsets a lot of that balance in a really good way. In terms of who's kind of the number two in the office, that's a storyline that's never, you know, it's funny. Cause right. It's like, Jim's always the number two, but Dwight thinks he is.
But Jim doesn't want the number
doesn't
two.
Want
to be. Yeah. Now there's actually like a good foil for Dwight.
Yes.
in trying to get that. I think you made a good point too. Like that Dwight really cares about the job and that Andy is kind of trying to get, you know, succeed in other, like a different avenue, right? He's just trying to kind of,
yes. He's different tactics.
He's playing a social game.
Yes. Correct.
And I think too, with Michael,
Dwight's like, playing a physical game. This is for the survivor.
Yeah.
For the survivor.
Yeah. With Michael, I mean, he has some genuine skill as a salesman. He's bad at being a manager, but his, yeah. like, where he fails as a manager, it's genuine, right? Like, Andy knows mm-hmm. that he's, like, you know, he's going to...
You're bad at this, too.
that he's going to, like, you know, use name repetition and...
Personality mirroring.
Yeah,
never exactly. breaking off a handshake.
Yes, yeah. right. Which is not necessarily, you know, that's not him doing the job, right? That so I think that's in a way that makes him a new personality, a new character.
Yeah.
for the ensemble.
The comedy of someone unexpectedly shows up for dinner. You're at a four top. There's four seats, and just the comedy of how do we add a fifth seat? It's just kind of a funny situation, mm-hmm. and where everything's a little off balance. And that's Andy to me is sort of like let's play with that.
I think too, like beginning of season three is kind of this opening up of the office sort of universe or the little mm-hmm. world that they live in. You know, the first couple seasons is very much in the physical Scranton location, a little bit in corporate. We meet the branch managers. We hear a little bit about the other branches, but
yeah.
to see Jim go to one and then have those characters come into the fold changes a lot. And I also think kind of with what you're going off of with Andy as this sort of completing the triangle. Mm-hmm. Andy's such a live wire in this early part of the season. Mm-hmm. Like you see Jim do his run back, his classic Jell-O prank, and you know, Andy kicks the trash can mm-hmm. and Jim looks down, and it's like previously the biggest consequence would be that Dwight would go tell on Jim.
Right.
I will tell on you my direct superior, which is me. And like with Andy, it's like, I have no idea what this guy's going to do. Right? Yeah. There's like this sort of...
Yes. He's like, a physical presence in the office, like more than anyone else. Mm-hmm.
And you don't... Like, it's just very funny. There's like this sort of unknown with him. And then also, you know, Andy brings so much, like as a... Yeah. Like you said, as a opponent to Dwight or a rival to Dwight, like another sort of person sucking up to Michael. He brings a lot in. And then also, I mean...
The unstable compound.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Two explosive personalities, as Phyllis might say. I also think maybe to move to Karen. Like Karen is also another character that comes in and like just has a different vibe because she's kind of like, she's not the same. I don't want to say that she's the same as Pam, but she has a similar vibe in that she gets along well with Jim. She seems like this is a bad way to say it, but like a cool person. Like
100%.
She would be in the coalition for a reason.
Yes.
We'll say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's something there that like, you know, I don't know exactly how
she's
to
under 40
cool, you know, like, within the show, but like, yeah. I think it is like, you know, Jim's cool. Pam's cool. Like, I mean, even in the early days, Toby and Kevin are cool. You
He's
know what
cool.
I mean?
From the mouth of babes.
And cool is a very, you know, can be kind of abstract in this usage. But I'm thinking like maybe it's like relatable to the viewer, I guess.
Right.
Because the viewer is kind of supposed to kind of act through Jim, Pam, et cetera, a little bit, I think. And so it's like, yes, this is a person that could be friends with Jim, that could be friends with Pam, coalition for a reason. Characters like, yeah, sometimes it's like Oscar, Kevin, Toby, they can kind of dip in a little bit here and there. Like I'm thinking of, you know, in Office Olympics when Phyllis is like, you calling me a hoe? Jim says, is that trash talk from Phyllis? Ryan, for example, in I'm jumping around a lot. In Benihana at Christmas, when Ryan uses all the good excuses, and he's like, look alive, welcome back, Halpert.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments when the characters seem like they could be friends and connect. And Karen brings a lot of that. And it's desperately needed in Stanford because the other characters in Stanford are Josh, the boss, the characters that are not really given a lot of time and attention. And then Karen.
Yeah. Right.
It's almost like skill or talent plus apathy equals cool. You know, it's like if you can do your job but you don't really care about it, or you want like more in life, then you're cool. Like, whereas, you know, Dwight, he might have the skill but he cares too much. Or you know,
there's also a thing that Karen does where she brings in, where she flips it on Jim a little bit, where she's always looking at the camera and doing this. And she does that little Jim half smile. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Yeah.
Like there's something like really, I think significant to kind of being one of the first sort of flips on Jim as like this sort of.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
oh, he doesn't find Jim charming. Adorable.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's a little bit of that, which I really love. Not everyone is as casual as you and Jim, Pam.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Hey, dude, want to marry me?
Yeah. Right.
Philip Hellers, how they hanging?
Yeah. She's, she comes in. It's almost like in, when Kathy, Pam's replacement, and comes in, and like Phyllis has that line of like, it'd be nice to have someone young. Like, it's nice. It's a nice energy to have some youthful energy in the office, right? Or like, and I think that's definitely Karen brings that as well. Of like, hey, oh, another someone to hang out with kids. You know, the younger people. And when I say kids, yeah, I just mean like under 40, who maybe still has a lot of hope in their career of what they might go and do. And that's one way to divide the office, is sort of like people that have resolved to just be like, I am here, this is my job, you know, like Sir Ian McClellan. Like, yes, I am a middle-aged accountant at a small mid-sized paper firm. Like, he's sort of, this is what I do. And then there's the people that feel like this is still a step in their something in their life's journey. So Karen is definitely that, as is Andy. And they come in as a pair, sort of, I would say, as opposed to the other people from Stanford.
They kind of come in as like, again, you don't want to make like one-to-one comparisons, but they kind of come in as the Dwight and the Pam to some extent.
Well, right. It's sort of, I guess it's how they're sort of established percentage, when they're at
like
Stanford.
They would be the Dwight and Pam at Stanford, for sure. And so it's, and again, you know, whether the writers meant to have them around as long as they did, who knows, but it's something that, it's like, there's just too many too many chefs in the kitchen, or too many cooks in the kitchen when they show up at the merger.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the Spider-Man meme when they're pointing at each other.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We got to figure out, like, figure out who belongs. Like, this town ain't big enough for all of us.
Right.
And so that's a big plot point of season three.
Well, you think a little bit about Dwight telling Michael he should fire someone immediately.
Right.
And also, even in that episode, when Pam and when Karen first comes in, she starts complimenting Pam's sweater. Like, they seem to start to get along. And then Michael comes in and just, like, ruins everything.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
That was your dad a GI?
Yeah. Right.
Rough stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. So I think it's worth mentioning, too, that, like, not only were they expecting Andy to leave the show, he kind of did. Mm-hmm. He, you know, he has his blow up. He punches a hole in the wall. It's kind of one of the most explosive exits of the show.
Yeah.
But of course, it didn't take, which is kind of interesting that they, after he was gone, they decided that that they should bring him back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I guess is the is that the return? No.
So the return is when he punches the wall.
That's when he punches.
And the wall. He comes back in safety training.
Gotcha. Yeah. So and like we were saying, he kind of comes back as almost a slightly different character, maybe like a more there's a lot more of the Ivy League thing. He's
they make him much
now.
More harmless.
Yeah,
I think a little less volatile.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one might say a bit neutered. Mm-hmm. We'll say, and I think they have to, because they're like, yeah, they can't have two Dwights.
Yeah,
they need to figure out how does this shape fit into this puzzle in Scranton. So, and you know, it bears repeating what you said. I mean, like, we're not introduced to them in Scranton. We're introduced to them in Stamford, where they're, you know, like they already have their own office culture. They already have their Call of Duty. Everyone already has their roles. They sit in a vertical line together. Like, mm-hmm. So we already know the characters. So it's really when they get to Scranton is when we sort of see the chemical equation or experiment sort of come to fruition.
It is funny too that when Andy is kind of introduced in season three and comes to Scranton, he's a foil for Dwight for Michael's affection, but later he becomes a foil for Dwight for Angela's affection,
and then Aaron's.
And then Aaron's. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's almost like Andy never. I mean, from the merger, from the get-go, Andy's never really at home there. Like, he's never quite accepted and settled. Like, he moves from one person to the next. No one really is inviting him or, like, I mean, I guess we know he goes to Daryl's family's
party.
Yeah. Party. That's about the only social thing we see him ever get or talk about. Yeah, so he's never. And he's kind of that way with his own family. I mean, now I think about it, Andy's a really tragic figure. Like, you know, even his home doesn't feel like a home. His family is like, he's an extra.
Writers reject him in season 9.
I know. I was like, wow, he really hung around for a while.
Yeah.
A battle between the Nardog and crippling loneliness, despair,
right.
Depression.
Yeah.
Despair, depression.
Yeah. Yeah. So all that is to say, to bring it back to Karen, she is a she's a much less sort of explosive figure than Andy. Mm-hmm. And she comes in as a foil to Pam, like for Jim's affection in this time when Pam is single. Like, I mean, to be honest, that's really the biggest part of her character is she comes in already dating Jim when he comes back. Like, the writers need another reason to stretch this Pam Jim thing out for another season.
And even when, I mean, you know, Karen kind of exits the show end of season 3, in sort of a kind of a fade out, right? She just sort of she goes to lunch.
She says she's not going to go anywhere, that she won't be going anywhere, and then a couple days later, her desk is empty.
That's right. Yeah, that's what we learn in season four. But like, you know, she kind of just says like, oh, you know, I'm not going to hang around for you to do your interview. I'm going to go meet my friends for lunch.
Right,
and that's the end. And but she only comes back for the lecture circuit, where
In Branch Wars.
Oh, sorry. That's
right. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. You're right. Yeah.
There are a lot of in and out, and when do we see them again? Like, it happens a ton. It's not like these characters, all of them have, like, really clean intro-outros.
Right.
They become part of the show, and they become, like, little characters and come back from time to time.
And Threat Level Midnight.
Exactly.
Of course.
So,
no one's ever really gone.
You know, Karen also serves a little bit as a foil to Michael as, like, a competent boss in these moments. And even, you know, even as, like, you know, if we're talking about her as this sort of foil or rival or whatever to Pam, it's very funny to see her later to be like, yeah, I cried for weeks over that guy. So to see him in a ladies' warehouse uniform with a fake mustache made me pretty happy. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So it's nice to see that she gets that little, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even, I mean, we didn't really talk about Andy's exit. I think we should talk about Baby Wawa a little bit. I mean, yeah,
Andy comes and goes kind of a few times.
He does.
I mean, yeah, anger management, and then he comes back, and then he goes off on one of his honeymoons, or his many honeymoons.
That's right.
The boat trip. So, like, Andy comes and goes quite a bit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think his finishing, sort of his final act, his kind of last bow from the stage is his song that he sings. Oh, it's nice to hear him sing in the proper context. No, it's not when that quote says. But that's sort of like... Everyone's dreading, no, Andy, don't play a song. And then he kind of gets his last, like, hey, he's actually good at this.
Yeah.
And I know it's might be awkward for him to be playing this guitar while he looks at all of you, but, I mean, to me, that's his true exit from the show is singing the Will You Remember Me.
You think of all the times when he's playing the banjo and, you know, playing banjo with Dwight, or he's playing the zitar.
Or just a cappella.
Yeah, a cappella. Playing that zitar in Moroccan Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
You take requests? Sure. Yeah. Please stop. Try to have a Christmas party.
Yeah.
And then so, yeah, when he gets up and he gets up and he says, Lorelai and I would like to play you a song. It's kind of like, where are we going based on everything that we've had seen in the past?
I'm pretty sure that's what B.B. King named his guitar.
Lucille.
Oh, Lucille. That's right. That's right. That's right.
I was going to say, is it a Gilmore Girls reference?
Of course it is. Right? It has to be. Yeah. But then, yeah, he plays that nice song and it's kind of this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice. I mean, it's nice. Mm. And he goes away and kind of puts a little tear in everyone's eye and then goes and becomes Baby Wawa. Like, obviously, we follow him down to America's Next Acapella Sensation or whatever the show's called with Aaron Rodgers judging.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, Clay Aiken, and Santi Gold.
So, you know, his story isn't over, but, and then, you know, we see him finally, we see him at the, you know, his college, his Cornell, you know, commencement
speech.
Well,
and he gets the little last, one of the best quotes, at least for me, in the show, which is, I wish there was a way to know you were in the good old times when you're in them. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. I mean, that's the enduring, his enduring contribution to the show is that line.
Yeah. Sure. I think that there is something very poetically sweet, too, about that, you know, his ending is sort of at Cornell. You know, he spent the entire show talking about how much he loves Cornell, and you're kind of like, there's no way.
It's not my fault. I live across the street from campus. I hang out with the guys all the time.
Once, twice, three times a week.
No, I wish we'd gotten a Broccoli Rob resolution too with him. It is nice that he's been asked to like be the speaker at Cornell. Like I'm sure whoever was when he graduated was probably a figure of note, and it is. As perverted as Andy's journey is in all sorts of ways, like he sort of ends up with what he cares the most, which is like his alma mater.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I mean, in the finale, and we'll do, you know, we've been saving, this big finale episode for later on. Finally, kind of get to a large extent, most of the characters kind of get what they want.
Yeah.
And Andy, to a large extent, he says, I will be pursuing fame of any kind.
Yes.
So cooking shows he ends up getting that.
Yep.
I think, you know, to kind of bring it back to the season three characters, unless I don't know, there's some more you want to say about Andy real quick?
No, we can move on.
Those are the big ones. Yeah.
I mean, obviously he'll come up again, no problem, but you know, characters like Hannah, Martin, Tony, they all kind of enter and exit quickly. Like Hannah, only shows up in a couple more episodes. I think Hannah's last episode is Benihana Christmas. Martin's is the convict, and then Tony's is the merger. So they kind of come in and out. Like there's a moment where you think like there's going to be this big sort of not clash, but you watch all the characters kind of bump into each other. You know, Hannah is breastfeeding in that cold open with Michael. There's that other moment with Michael. I'm confusing two
scenes. The look who's talking.
Yeah, the look who's talking. But then, you know, you also see. What is it? Karen watching Stanley like drink his Jell-O. but yeah, it just seems like there's going to be some more tension. But they kind of fall away, and then it's Andy and Karen for that season. And then, you know, the next one that I have kind of written down to highlight is Aaron season 5.
Great.
Obviously, we get Ryan in corporate. He leaves in season 4, etc. Ryan kind of comes in and out too. Aaron coming in at Michael Scott Paper Company is a rather big addition to the show because she is in through the rest of the series. She gets
a
few different like romantic arcs. She gets the resolution with her parents in the end. So there is kind of Erin does come in as kind of a character who becomes a major character, but she comes in, I guess, again as a replacement for Pam. Yeah.
She comes in very quietly.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. She Charles Minor hires her, and she's got the same name as Kelly, and it doesn't even feel like they've come up with her comedic personality yet, you know, when we first meet her, which is funny because, you know, Ellie Kemper, I think they would have known that she was very, very funny.
Sure. I mean, that's why they, you know, why they cast her, right?
At what point do you think we start to see Erin's, I mean, maybe it's just through the Dwight and Andy competing for her affection, that we start to kind of get the whole she's a rube.
I mean, it's kind of not natural, but when a character like this appear, or Erin's character, I should say, seems to mirror a little bit about what it's like when a character or a person actually joins your office or your workforce. You don't know them much at first. What do you know about them? They're nice. They're quiet. You know, it takes a while for you to actually learn about them as a person, learn about them as a character. Like if Erin had come in like fully formed as this comedic person, you might have thought that she's not going to last that long on the show. Like, that's somebody that comes in like the search committee is one of the managerial candidates. But Erin comes in, and I mean, it makes sense that they would use it as like Dwight and Andy can kind of be the ones who are making all the jokes, right? Kind of vying for her attention and affection in this first episode. But then like it comes across bit by bit, piece by piece, and it kind of becomes a funny resolution or a funny reveal that Erin is a bit of a rube. He says, why don't we take out a life, you know, big life insurance policy on a new person? She's like, I learned nothing. You know, Erin, do you have your birth certificate with you? Sure. It's like little things like that that kind of show Erin like being like so earnest and so it's funny to watch her character build like that. But
and Charles hires her. No.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
so she's not even like hired. She's hired by someone who also has a intro and an exit this season, within season five. So it would like it speaks to Erin's character that she survives the season and stays on. It would have been very easy to, you know, she's gone after this, but she's so funny. She's great. And it's funny that like Charles hired her and not Michael, because Michael seems like a great pair with Erin. Right.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
And Charles, it just seems like it's funny that like she made it through an interview with Charles. Like, really?
Well, Charles shows remarkably poor judgment.
That's true.
Kevin, you're on phone. Stanley, you're going to be my productivity czar.
He makes a decision.
Yeah. Right. And it's very funny. And Dwight as his number two, I find that extraordinarily surprising.
Really?
Jim has been a disappointment. Yeah. So it doesn't really surprise me
that
much.
That's a great David Wallace. I forgot.
I find that extraordinarily surprising.
But yeah, it's funny though because like I laughed to myself even while you were speaking just a moment ago, Alex, because I thought of Erin being like, "Do I still have a job here?"
Yeah,
you know when the company gets bought out. So, you know, they kind of make space for her as this receptionist, and it does kind of like add, like her coming in does work as a replacement Pam because it allows Pam to do something other than be the receptionist and maybe be the person who's always taking care of Michael or the person who's always kind of being hit on, so to speak, by a lot of the other characters in the show. Mm-hmm. Erin comes into that role and like has such a different dynamic with Michael.
But is also immediately hit on by Andy and Dwight.
Right, of course, yes. But I mean, I just say that, I only mean to say that, Pam is no longer that. Pam can try to be a salesperson. She can be an office administrator. She can be a mom. Like all these different things that she does through the rest of the show.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being the receptionist, which she is for the first five seasons. So it changes quite a bit. And it allows Pam to kind of do the different things. You bring in this new, different character. Her relationship with Michael is one of my favorite things in the whole show. You know?
I just think about times like with the who's hungry? They become such a unit after a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bossa nova. Her dance.
It's great. Yeah, she's on board with his happy box, his sad box, spraying the champagne. She's right there for Michael at all times.
I like.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, she does. She's not into Holly.
Maybe Holly's not in a position where she can be shooing guys away.
Is she a really good cook or something?
Yeah. I'm waiting for my boss's pretty friend. Oh, you're Holly. For God's sakes, the ants are about to start farming. We could talk a little bit about Charles. I think Charles kind of illustrates this. I don't know. There's something that funny that happens with The Office, and this is also true of a workplace, where like decisions happen off screen, and then the reality gets translated in the original into the actual workplace.
He's so, just there.
You know, yeah. It's like Michael talks about meeting this new guy in corporate, and they have a great, they really hit it off right away. Yes. And then all of a sudden, Charles is there.
Screw the teapot letter. Yeah. I would love to see that. That
early intro between Charles and Michael.
How does he do it? Yeah. What does he say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He uses his best jokes from the joke book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Charles is there. I mean, Charles is kind of, you know, he's imposing a little bit because, like, he comes off as very smart. He has this effect on women.
Right.
He, like, really sort of, I'm trying to think of the right word, but he, like, makes Jim feel very, very silly all of a sudden for wearing a tuxedo. And I was just watching the extended cut of, what is it? I think it's of Michael Scott Paper Company, mm-hmm. where they, Dwight and Andy, I mean, in that episode, the extended cut, they do way more with Dwight and Andy as they're being friends and doing the hunting thing.
Right.
Like the fake gunshots and the fake deaths. Right. And they're doing all this stuff to Jim. And they're like, Jim, you got to be dead by now. And he's fine. So he plays along and puts his head down on his desk. And Charles walks out and he goes, everyone, Jim is trying to take a nap.
It is. He is. He's just the opposite of Michael Scott.
He has like he has this kind of commanding presence, I should say,
right.
in the office. And it's very funny to watch how Charles is almost like a...
Does he even go to the bathroom? Oh, yes, he does. Oh, he does.
Charles in some ways, is kind of an early precursor to Robert California. Yeah. Obviously, they're very different characters.
Yeah.
But in that when you have a boss... And I remember reading interviews about this, that like when you have a boss that makes you like sit up straight and want to make it look like you're working or you want to impress them, it's a very different dynamic from Michael.
Yeah. You know?
So Charles brings a little bit of that.
Yeah. I like too. Charles has he's just so different from Michael in every way. But there he does exhibit there's some similar overlaps they have. And maybe it's just the way they film it. But like I love how there's an episode where he keeps looking at Jim through the blinds, just like how Michael looks at Ryan.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a couple things like that, and just the way he sort of, like, moves through the office and everyone changes their behavior when he's around. Like,
Angela's in love with him. Yeah.
It's just like...
We've never seen Angela, like, respect anyone.
And for a while, Dwight is, like, you know, not...
Yeah.
He's unlike how he is with Michael, he doesn't care about Charles.
Here's something about me. I respect authority or something. Yeah.
Well, that's with D'Angelo, right?
Yeah, he's like,
oh, is that? Oh, right.
Yeah,
that's
he's like, I respond to positive leadership. Or,
that's right, yeah.
Strong leadership. But there is a moment where Charles is like, let's get a drink after work. He's like, I like your focus, you know? And all
so
of a sudden...
focused.
Yeah, and then later Dwight's like, I didn't like the shirt sleeves at first, Michael, but now...
Yeah, I know. He's like a...
straight jacket.
Like in that moment, Dwight's like an old Brigadoon ship that's just no wind and then just... Yeah, like all of this, he's like, I am fully formed.
You have unleashed the wolf.
It's very cool. Very great. Will Smith-esque.
Very cool. Yeah.
He's the new guy, Charles. This is Stanley.
I guess Charles's exit is in Company Picnic.
Right. I mean, I think for the purpose of this episode, it's probably the more impactful one is Broke.
Right.
And because there is an element where Charles's departure mirrors Michael's. And Michael says, nope, you're done.
You're done. I mean, literally, you're done. Thank you. Thank you, Idris.
Yeah, so we get that like nice sort of closure moment where it seems like the universe has come back to normal. Order is restored.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is great. But then, of course, Charles isn't all the way gone until Company Picnic where they have the, you know, the volleyball.
For Charles, it's like, great. I don't have to be in Scranton anymore like running this branch. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. I feel like in that moment, he's like, thank God I'm going back to New York. This is awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, then we don't really get any more Charles after Company Picnic.
Must be nice to get a rest from all your rest. He's like, I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Let's go.
I've been up for a while.
The double point. We don't really get any. We don't really know his fate. We can assume he's gone in the.
He'll be fine.
Mass exodus.
I mean, just the way that we see him suck up to David Wallace.
It yeah. would have been really funny in the Secret Santa episode when they find out about the bankruptcy if, like, Kelly is like, what about Charles?
Is Charles coming back?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be fired. Alan will be fired, too. You know, it'd be funny then if Angela's like, what about Charles? You know?
Yeah.
I love when Angela runs out and she's in the rain.
He's oh, like, my gosh.
She does not need to go dumpster diving for companionship. She's like, her makeup is running because of the water. Yeah. She has a scarf.
Yeah, that's she's it. So old. Yeah. Yeah, that's a yeah. I mean, Charles is everything Michael Scott is not. Everything I want to be. Who's next?
Well, the other ones that I have written down here, Gabe and Joe Bennett in season 6.
What cool. a pair.
Yeah. So, Saber episode for Gabe as first mm-hmm. arrives. Joe appears in the video, I believe, and then I believe her first actual in-office appearance is in the next episode, the manager and the salesman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we get Gabe come in, and like it's so funny to think about Gabe's introduction versus what he becomes.
Yeah.
Because Gabe, right. yeah, enters as this, you know, just like
well,
this.
First they tear his box of equipment apart.
Right.
So this is here for Gabe Lewis.
Yeah. But yeah, go, sorry, as you were.
No, it's just funny that, like, you know, he comes in as the voice of corporate. He's kind of this
yeah.
corporate. Gabe seems tall. You know, yeah. he's like, yeah. he's kind of this.
He's corporate wallpaper. He's sort yeah. of just, he's the living embodiment of like a corporate policy where it's like, why is he here? Well, he just has to be because it's in the handbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you get, again, I think it's a bit of a slow burn with, mm-hmm. you know, with Aaron, mm-hmm. with Gabe. They're introduced. They seem normal. The more you get to know them, they're total creeps. like, I mean, and you just get it in little bites at first that kind of Gabe's a bit of a pushover when it comes to Joe. And then just more and more and more, we see that slowly develop. And then all of a sudden, he's
sometimes
total.
I wonder if I have ovaries in my scrotum.
Well, you know, Gabe comes in and he's kind of this extra corporate figure. And it's funny because he's kind of, he's definitely, he's so far from Charles, who is operating as a managerial figure in the conference room.
Yes.
And
also very far from Toby.
Right.
Who's another corporate figure.
But mm-hmm. Toby's like such a...
It's been checked out since
pushed
June.
Over. Yeah. Oscar says I've been checked out, huh? Yeah. But then, you know, Gabe only comes up from time to time. I mean, the Halloween episode, the costume contest episode, yeah. I should say, season 7. Oh, no, Michael, Gabe's not the boss. You're the boss. You know, like there's like, that weird, funny tension between Saber corporate, Dunder Mifflin, and Michael and all these things. And Gabe becomes, you know, such a ridiculous figure. Like you think of where he comes in as like the representative. They all applaud for him yeah. and he goes, and also to you. And they clap right back.
Yeah.
Contrast that to like season 8 when he's like making fun of Daryl and trying to hit on Val. Mela Kaliki yeah, Maka is Hawaii's way. Right. You know,
she'll be just, screaming it all night. Yeah.
She'll be screaming her own last name.
Is that a palm tree or did Gabe get skinnier? Either way, that's pee on it.
I would even take apricot preserves at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. He does fall so far. I mean, because what is it? The cheer, not, is that what it was? No, Glee.
Glee.
Yeah.
The Glee party. People, everyone kind of like respects him a little bit still. Mm-hmm. And like there's a threat of right. him, you know, kind of usurping
gotta go to the boss's party.
Michael. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And then Aaron sort of. You know, he's like, yes, I've been dating Aaron. It has been, in a word, exquisite. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah, we're still dating. Why do you always ask me?
Yeah, I think he's a rat, and I think he's trying to ruin my relationship.
I think he's a rat. Well, like, yeah, yeah. And Gabe is another, it's funny, like, how different it is than, say, you know, Karen, where it's like, well, he's another, like, person. He's maybe the youngest person, like, who comes mm-hmm. in next to Aaron. Mm-hmm. Like, he's another person who's like, seemingly plugged into current pop culture, is young, but just has nothing right. to offer like anyone else in his age group at the office. And part of that is, I think, too, just he's almost transient, and like he half belongs to corporate, he half belongs to the Scranton branch, but mainly he's just sort of Joe's attack dog, or not attack dog, but mm-hmm. like
lapdog.
Watchdog, lapdog. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah. She already has two attack dogs. Mm-hmm. So he's just not respected by anyone. Doesn't really seem like he cares that much. He tries to assert his dominance, but he can be easily bought out for a nameplate, one of those right. little nameplates. Like he's just not, we don't really know what he wants.
Yeah. What's in it for GSL?
Yeah, like not sure. It seems like he just kind of wants to not be alone, and he wants to create soundscapes.
Well, and he shows more and more sort of, like, as he gets revealed, his character, and granted, his apartment in Viewing Party seems a little more normal or not so weird, but, like, as we get into, like, season 8, like, he becomes stranger and stranger.
Yeah.
With, mm-hmm. like, you know, his... Right. You know, all of his cinema of the unsettling.
Girl talk?
Or like when, like, the like, Gabe, do you have anything? And he's like,
yeah. It's got footage of Stanley in his own car. Yeah.
Is that my grandmother? Yeah. But at the same time, as a corporate figure, you know, there's like, he gets kind of pushed around a lot of times. Stan, you're up next. It wasn't me. What a rich timbre your voice has.
Right.
and that when we go to Tallahassee, his desk is just in the lobby.
Like, kind of behind a plant.
Exactly.
Yeah. He has me toiling a lot of people for him.
And his schedule is Tuesdays and Thursdays. Like, he's not even in the same place for 2 days in a row.
What better way to get over my crippling fear of flying?
I don't know. Have you guys ever been in a situation, too, where you find yourself in a position at work where you're a little bit like, I don't really know who my boss is. Mm. Like, you know, he's got, you know, he's Joe's lapdog, and then he's Robert's lapdog, and, like, you know, he's in between places and stuff like that. Yeah. I've had that position before on a movie where you're like my role is not clearly defined here, and I'm kind of just everybody's assistant.
Yeah. That's pretty much his whole character. Mm-hmm. I would say up until, I mean, how does he exit really?
It's at the end of Free Family Portrait Studio. So or at least like if we go by his credits,
mm-hmm. sure.
At the end of Free Family Portrait Studio, when David Wallace comes back to buy the company. You know, and Robert California makes his exit. We just don't
that
see
sort
Gabe.
Of removes Saber from the
right. We don't really see Gabe again until Moving On, when Andy That's brings him back, and Aaron says, "Oh no."
Something I love about Gabe, obviously, Zach Woods is an incredible, you know, improv mm-hmm. actor. Some of the best bloopers are Zach Woods making people laugh. But it's funny, like his Gabe's greatest moment, no one from the office sees, which would be his speech as Lincoln. That's probably his crowning achievement as far as getting applause from people. He does a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He tells a whole story. He acts it out. It's beautiful. And then no one's going to see it.
Yeah.
It's funny you mention that. So, I mean, this has become a little bit of just a Gabe appreciation moment, and rightfully so. We love Gabe. We all love laughing at all the Gabe moments, for sure. But it's funny you mention that because, I mean, as far as his exit goes, it just kind of happens. I believe it kind of happens with the whimper. I can't think of, like, kind of happens sort of silently. And that's okay. I mean, it happens to a lot of people.
And it shows season, up, too.
Yeah, and then, like, new season, they always say, like, all right, this is what happened. So, like, beginning of season 9... Mm-hmm. I think, or maybe even Toby says it. I am embarrassed now that I can't think of it. But he talks, like Toby's talking about Kelly and Ryan going to Miami, Ohio.
Right.
You know, Gabe is just kind of gone.
Right.
But, you know, he does have, it's funny, like he doesn't have that. He comes in as a sort of mild presence and leaves this very strange one.
Yeah.
I mean, if we go then to Joe Bennett.
So JB.
Joe Bennett, you know, comes in as this sort of whirlwind. With dogs and Gabe carrying all of her stuff, and she's got this.
Yeah,
you never know with Joe.
Yeah,
even on the video where we meet her, mm-hmm. right on the video call with Michael. Even through video, she is commanding that room. She is literally making Gabe move the laptop. She's able to. Hey, like as Michael's walking out of a room, convinces Michael to turn around and like.
With all due respect, I've never seen a company more mismanaged than Dunder Mifflin. Like you know, I mean, if you just look at all the previous. Bosses or people above Michael.
Yeah.
You got Jan, David Wallace, Charles. You know, nobody's come in and demanded this much respect. Everybody likes her. Everybody wants them to wants her to like them.
Yeah.
You know, she's very interesting. She doesn't take any BS from anybody, including Dwight. You know.
Yep.
She's a totally different corporate figure.
I think with Joe, she has such a big influence on Michael, on Jim, on Dwight, mm-hmm. on all these characters, and she is just sort of a forceful presence. I think it is good that she's mostly in the back half of season 6 and not so much in season 7, because, I mean, it's Kathy Bates, right? You're not going to get her for, like, probably the rest of the show, but she does have such a good power and influence on all these characters. I mean, she destroys the co-manager thing. Sounds like each of you is doing half a job. He's like, can't give me syrup and tell me it's gravy because gravy ain't sweet, is it, Jim?
Right.
And, and then I think also, you know, when she's talking to Dwight about not owning land and, you know, even when she tells Aaron to go home because she's sick.
Right. You know, sure. Beaumont Adams, a girl's gun.
Right. Yeah. You know, what is she like? Oh, she calls her like a little mouse or something like that. Right. Yeah. She's like, you need to go home sick. Mm-hmm. But she just has this commanding presence. And I think like it changes a lot of things in the office. It feels very competent.
Yeah.
Which is kind of in line, or it kind of follows the incompetence, let's say, that we see from sort of Dunder Mifflin Corporate from like seasons 4 through 6.5.
Yeah.
You know, or the first half of 6.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like Saber comes in as the savior. Joe is like the figurehead of Saber, and she's the one who's making all these changes. She's like the one who maybe can get Holly back from Nashua.
Mm-hmm.
She's the one who is changing all these things. And, you know, she just has such a big, forceful presence on all the characters.
She almost comes in as like, oh, finally. We've been waiting for maybe this kind of a character for 6 seasons. Someone who can just look and be like, this is ridiculous. What are we doing? I mean, even David Wallace is such an absentee father to the branch where you're just like, dude, if you spent one day here, you'd see like, you need to get rid of Michael.
Replace Michael 100%. As soon as he says that, you know, he and Jan slept together very early in the show.
And Joe comes in and immediately holds Michael accountable. And Michael kind of like responds to it in a good way. Mm-hmm. You know, Michael like wants to be respected by Joe. Mm-hmm. She is a breath of fresh air in some ways. And it's like they did a very good job casting Kathy Bates. And she does such a good job portraying this character because I remember watching it as the show was coming out. And you're like, now it's going to be it's a different company. It's not even Dunder Mifflin. Mm-hmm. It's not paper. How does this even work? And even her coming in just being like, Her whole introduction is just so, you're just like, oh, I can relax. Like, we're in great hands here.
Yeah.
This is going to work because she believes it can work. So we're good.
Yeah.
Kathy Bates is awesome. Awesome in this role.
Very, very good. Yeah.
And when she comes in twice, once on the call, hey, buddy. And just like, Gabe, I don't want to talk to your crotch. Like, her character's established so firmly. It's so fully baked right from the get-go. And then when she physically comes into the office with the Great Danes, I mean, she is like, that is what her personality feels like, is two giant dogs coming in. Everyone's like, whoa.
Speak.
Yeah. well, they like you. Yeah, they're sniffing Amy's crotch.
How long has it gone? How far has it gone?
Like that what you know, that moment.
How far
too,
has it gone?
That moment too, where like.
You don't have all the facts. I love him.
She's not mad.
There's a bit of a Logan Roy in her, you know, from Succession of like, you know, she'll deal, you know, she
right. Are you a freak?
No problem is unfamiliar to her.
Yeah. She's knows how to get rid of skeletons in the closet. She knows how to bury the bodies to get to where she is.
Just like Michael, I have a lunch later with the chief of police.
Like she just is, she's operating on a whole nother corporate level than anyone else we've met on the show. And it's a really fun ingredient to come into the show. And I agree with your point, Edwin, like she's not overused. Yeah. Would they have used Kathy Bates more if they could? Probably. Mm-hmm. But she's just the right amount of present. And her exit is also kind of unceremonious though. As far as Robert California, maybe we can transition.
Her last, we can move. Well, there is someone in season 7 we should talk about in between.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Joe and Robert California. But basically, I think Kathy Bates' last line, Joe Bennett's last line, is in the search committee. And she says, she's talking about Nellie, but she says, well, I'm not saying you must hire her. If you find someone who's clearly a fit, then fine. Just make sure they fit real good. No more manager turnover. Don't mess this up, Jim. Give Dwight an interview. I like a little bit of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from there, we go into the list, and Jim is describing that the search committee decided on Robert California, who came in, took one look around, drove down to Tallahassee, convinced Joe to give him her job.
Yeah.
CEO.
Yeah.
I love the way he looks at the camera. There. Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously there's like a couple mentions of Joe later on. Robert talks about Joe being his boss. You know,
right?
But it is interesting that
she must
just
be the head of the board or
way.
Something like that. She still owns the company. Right. Yeah.
folks, let's say you're a business owner. It's a brand new year. Things are off to a great start. But as we all know, eventually you will start to fall behind. There's just too much to do. Teams get buried in manual work. It takes forever to close the books. You got taxes coming up. Getting one source of truth is like pulling teeth. If this is you, you should know these three numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, streamlining accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, and more. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close their books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. 1, because your business is one of a kind. So you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs, key performance indicators, in one efficient system with one source of truth. Manage risk, get reliable forecasts, and improve margins. Everything you need to grow, all in one place. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/Scott. That's netsuite.com/Scott to get your own KPI checklist. netsuite.com/Scott.
Well, I guess that's a good transition then. Mm-hmm.
Well, no, there's one in between.
Oh, sorry.
There's a fan favorite.
FYI, I don't technically have a hearing problem, but sometimes when there's a lot of noises occurring at the same time, I'll hear them as one big jumble. Again, it's not that I can't hear, because that's false. I can. I just can't distinguish between everything I'm hearing.
Got it.
That brings us to Nate.
That's false. I can.
Nate, who enters in season 7 in the sex ed episode.
Yeah.
And becomes a fixture of the office of our podcast. It worked so well. I'm so happy that it came together that way.
We have his introduction. That's his introduction right there.
Yeah, yo soy bueno worker.
Right.
Yeah, that's his introduction. That,
yeah.
Right. But it's Nate comes in. And then Nate, as he is affectionately referred to early on, who is this guy by our cars?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, man. Dwight needed a henchman.
Yeah.
I only wish that we got more of that action.
Oh, that's awesome.
Reply it.
I know. He has a henchman at his farm and he has one at the office. He's got Moe's and Nate. Awesome.
Nate doesn't exude much of a presence on the rest of the staff besides to interrupt and kind of be there, you know, at times. Yeah. Nate,
yeah.
Not concern you. Yeah.
But Nate, Dwight sees something where he's like, I can mold this guy. Like, this guy is mine. Mm-hmm.
Reply it.
Nate is the Moe's of Dwight's day place.
Correct. Correct. That is correct.
Says here he works for Dow Chemical. We've lived together for 30 years and I've never once seen you go to work.
That's great. Mm-hmm. We learn about Nate, we're introduced to Nate.
There is no slow burn with Nate.
No.
Right out the gate.
No.
This
Dwight
guy.
Dwight picks him up on a curb.
Yeah.
Where temporary workers are hanging out.
See.
And he's the only one. He's like, we don't talk to that man. Yeah. But, you know, Nate doesn't know.
No quiero decir más.
Don't. That's such a great minor character, too. What else do you need to know about Nate other than that he's looking for any kind of work to the point where he'll stand up there in a flannel.
He's kind of there to kind of distract and deflect and create ridiculous moments. I mean, you think
kind
about...
Kind of like Creed?
Yeah,
a little bit. He does. He's got about the same line ratio as Creed.
He'll chime in with something that no one responds to. That's very Creed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having only known you a short while, Brian.
Right. Yeah, he's just kind of there. Yeah. Oh, Daryl.
Right.
Yeah.
Does Nate have any talking heads?
I can't think of one.
Whoa. I don't think he has any talking heads.
I can't think of one.
Do you think that is a benefit because it keeps Nate as the strange person that we don't get access to?
Yeah.
Yes. Or is it a tragedy because we don't get to hear more of Nate just talking to a camera that wants to hear what he has to say?
I think it fits with the story that the crew was like, dude, we asked him a question and he just talked for 15 minutes and none of it's usable.
He couldn't seem to hear the questions. He just...
my mother and I are quarreling because I can't stay out of her stuff.
Perfect. Yeah.
Nate doesn't have an exit. He appears in the finale.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Right.
But and he also isn't a character that gets what he wants. He's just kind of Nate.
What does Nate want?
Yeah.
A job, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just wants to stay employed.
He wants a piece of gum.
Yeah.
Not too minty though.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Gabe, Toby mashup. Little bit of he sort of just floats, exists. Mm-hmm. Occasionally he's tested by Dwight.
Yeah.
Oh no. Die. Yeah, good choice. When he has to deal with the beehive, things like that. And then when the whole, like, you know, I mean, obviously when they have to rehire the warehouse, they're so desperate that Nate is the example of this is how desperate they are for anyone. Yeah. They just need a warm warm body is all we need down there.
Nate and Gideon and Bruce from the gym.
Yeah. Yeah. Also one of the great deliverers of bloopers.
Yeah.
Mark Brooks. And I don't know why I've been seeing a lot of the Frank did it one keeps coming across my feeds. Do you know who defaced the mural? Frank. Frank did it? I don't know his last name. But sure, yeah, Frank did it. Improvised right there.
That's amazing. That's a
good I would have loved a Gabe Nate scene, just the two of them having lunch.
Yeah, or like an episode, that they discover a friendship.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he's more gullible than like Aaron.
Totally.
He's the weakest one?
He's the densest person
in the
office. There's
Nate like struggling to like stack the flat cardboard boxes. Nate, your mother is dying. So she's going to pull through again?
Falls to his knees.
Yeah.
All right. Who's next?
If you want more Nate content, you can check out most episodes of this podcast, but also our Nate episode, which is one of our all-time favorites. One of the last ones I have here is Robert California, also in season 7. He comes in the search committee, and he's one of the candidates along with Ray Romano and Warren Buffett and Catherine Tate as Nellie Bertram.
Correct.
I almost said Ellie Kemper. as these different characters who are vying for this new manager job. We don't know, or we didn't know as viewers, who's going to become the next manager, but Robert California obviously comes in like a wrecking ball, steamroller maybe I should say. And
there you go.
Makes his presence felt from the very beginning. And I love, like I said, Charles is kind of this precursor to Robert. I'm thinking of when Jim's presence, and he's like, "You strike me as someone who would be flattened, Jim. You can answer that." Yes. It was your choice, not mine. You know. Yeah.
You're a man and then of later, great confidence.
And then later Jim says, "He terrifies me, but I also think he might be a genius."
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of him. He's creepy. Mm-hmm. He's this lizard king. He has an access to it. It's like, yeah, he's a dark web human. He's the human version of the dark web, where it's like, you're in a whole different, you operate in a whole different part of life here.
And I'm on the freaking moon, Robert.
And it's, you know, it's one of the few characters we literally get an interview with him before we meet him, you know, and we see, he's one of the only characters to look at the cameraman the way he does that we see that stays in the credits where he kind of cocks his head to the side, and he sort of, you know, you're like, you're always like
Dwight out immediately.
He's like the Terminator, where it's like he's scanning and there's information in his eyes, and he's just going like, "Oh, I can see your weakness now." Like he
stop trying to figure me out.
Yeah, too late. Yeah. And he does it to the camera crew, and like no one has done that yet. And so he's maybe the most disarming character that comes in, I would say, out of everyone we've talked about.
Well, and just the responses he gets from all these characters. Robert California, let's have a conversation. You know, like there's so much of what he brings in terms of like getting the characters to act a certain way. He changes the show completely.
Completely.
Like he becomes this sort of weird center of gravity, or that has a gravitational pull that affects all these other characters around him.
Yeah. Hey, Dad. Duh.
I mean, I love, too, that, like, you know, sure, he's a Charles Minor, but he's a slow burn also. We kind of start to, he reveals his weird flaws and weaknesses. Mrs. Robert California is a important episode for that, you know, with him running in frantic, you know, and yet he's still manipulative, even still. And then, of course, all is revealed sort of in his exit when we learn his real name and all that.
Right.
Well, or like you think about what Harry Janerone says in
Lizard Gang.
He says in Turf War, he's a Robert's running this place into the ground, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, wow. Okay. This is like a fresh perspective from someone
yes.
who is not Jim or Dwight or Lloyd Gross. This right. is a someone right. else who kind of has a beat on what's going on with the company.
Yeah.
He's a predator. Like, yeah. he is a predator in every way, which is he enjoys the thrill of the chase more than anything. I think we get this right away in his interview when he's like, he loves the interview process. He likes to win at mm-hmm. an interview and the pregnant pause and then
yeah,
my
you get,
response.
You get the sense that he is going and doing interviews like for fun. Like, exactly. You know what I mean? And also, like, if anyone had stopped and thought about it, it's like, Robert doesn't make any sense. He has, like, billionaire energy, but why did he apply for the manager position? I don't know. I guess he moves to Tallahassee.
Right.
To
but his house in Scranton, like, that is not a manager's house.
Right. Right. Yeah.
CEO's house.
When did he buy that? Yeah.
Why did he buy it in Scranton?
What was his life before
Saber
and Dunder Mifflin?
He would have bought a penthouse in New York. I feel like it's just like he's a man of complete mystery. He probably doesn't need the job. He's got some dark money.
Mm-hmm.
His identity is concealed. Like he's unlike anyone else. Well, he's not like Joe at all.
And what's kind of revealed, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge in the end, is that he is maybe an international criminal.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah. he's kind of says that he's basically running, like, a sex trafficking thing, is what...
Or he's about to get involved with one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have no idea what he's been up to before. I'd love to see the Netflix documentary about Bob Kazimakis.
Right. And, I mean, you're like... It's
to catch him
having him, you know, giving him Mrs. California. Like, it's interesting they even made the choice to give him a wife. But I do think we see his whole life. He's presenting a facade even to his wife.
Right.
I think that's pretty clear. And she's kind of already starting to figure this out. It's kind of the energy she gives.
She's totally looking to have an affair with Andy. Like, you know, I mean, it's just like, what is going on?
Yeah. I will not be blackmailed by a soft penis debutante.
Yeah.
Loves geishas. Yeah,
and that is a storyline that I do wish had played out a little more. Is like Andy is now having an affair with Robert California.
That would be great.
Ex-wife or something. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. His chemistry with Nelly is really funny. Where he just can't make a decision. Where like the sort of effect she has on him. He's very upfront. Mm-hmm. He's both a man of total secrecy and very upfront about things. When he's feeling horny, when he's feeling anything, he will let people know.
Yeah.
He calls people winners and losers to their face. But yeah, he's just like I said, he's just totally disarming, and people don't know what to do.
And his son.
Right.
Yeah, jeez.
Seems like all he talks about is sex. That's not true. He just talks about flesh. And his last episode is Free Family Portrait Studio, the last episode of season 8,
right.
where he talks to David Wallace, and everyone just kind of like looks at the camera as he kind of makes his exit, and he kisses Andy and turns to the camera and says, "Everyone, it's been a great year."
Right.
It is, looking at all these exits, it's kind of, it's the most exit-y of an exit. Mm-hmm. He gets to make a speech, something is revealed about him.
He says what he'll be doing now.
He says goodbye, and that's it. He doesn't come back.
Yeah, it's gone. And, you know, like I say, when he's a predator, like, I think he just likes to come and conquer and leave and go on to the next meal, whatever it is. And it's like, how many times has he done this? Who knows? But he clearly, like you say, he's not great at... He doesn't care if he runs the business into the ground. He's going to move on to something else.
To the next
he can talk himself in and out of anything, so he doesn't care
about
the consequences. I mean, He's a sociopath, right? Like,
you don't even know his real name.
Pretty clearly. I don't think he actually cares about anyone.
No.
But he loves squeezing people. He loves forcing people to admit something to themselves about themselves, or like the Halloween. Like, he just enjoys that control. And so his presence in the show when he comes in, it's at a point in the show where it's like kind of the right time to meet Robert California in season 8, where it's like, yeah, we've gotten to know everyone. We think we know everything about every character, and he kind of challenges that.
Yeah,
which is cool.
Yeah, I guess like what Robert really wants is like, you know, is when he talks about his house and he talks about how he wanted to have like, you know, orgies and all
that.
He
wants to wipe grease on the walls.
Right, that's what it's all. That's where he's like working towards.
And then I met the vegan.
We did on our Patreon. We did a special series about Party Down, and there's a character in Party Down who's like Thomas Lennon's character. Oh, who tries to have the Robert California party.
That's right.
I always think about that now with Robert California. Yeah. It's like I imagined the masquerade and hidden identities. And it's like, yeah, it would never happen that way.
What's the grove with the giant owl?
The Bohemian Grove?
Yeah, that's where he's headed.
He goes every year.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah.
He's there.
He's already...
You mean the Grove, the mall?
Yeah.
Steamtown Mall?
California?
Yeah, but you're right. I like, his exit is... It's the most look you in the eye exit out of everyone here.
Big time.
Yeah.
There is another season 7 exit that we might want to talk about a little bit. Michael's exit in season 7.
Oh, yeah.
Is also probably worth considering. We spent a lot. I mean, the thing is, the idea is kind of like intros and exits, like characters who come in, come out. Michael's exit is so dramatic. It's worth its own episode. And we've done quite a bit on Michael, leaving. And so, I don't know. Like, Michael's, it's very funny to. And maybe we can breeze through it, but like Michael's exit is so different. All these characters leave kind of immediately, or they leave at the end of the season.
Yeah,
they leave
it's the most sentimental.
We don't see them again. Michael has to get kind of untangled from everything in the office with all this resolution with every character before he can really make his clean break.
Yeah.
There's something about him. It's like an emotional goodbye, like to the audience. You know, for his exit, which you don't. No other character has something like that in the whole show.
Yeah,
except for the finale, which is kind of everyone.
Sure, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, Michael is the sun in the solar system for this show, and when he leaves, it's like it's a bit. Everyone feels a bit lost.
Yeah,
and I mean, obviously, D'Angelo, like Will Ferrell, comes in as just as bright of a light for a few episodes, but. Mm-hmm. He just bridges the gap till Robert California.
I mean, that's the thing why it's maybe not worth talking about D'Angelo in this regard, because D'Angelo's in and out so quickly.
Yeah.
You don't get to see the extended effects, really. You know?
He's the Simpsons meme of Grandpa Abe coming in and out. Mm. Yeah. Of that bar.
Why don't you and I get together after work? Grab a little sixer.
Yeah.
What is it? The REM album.
Oh, I don't remember.
For the people. On the jukebox. Make some sausage if you want. He goes, I think you'll find what you're looking for. Automatic for the people. He goes, I think you'll find what you're looking for over there. And he plays the Oscar. But yeah, I mean, Michael's exit becomes, you know, is its own thing. And it leads to all these characters, Search Committee, Robert California, all these characters vying for manager, Jacques Souvenir, Andy Darrell. Et cetera. And the only other kind of thing that we could see as a comparison is when Michael thinks he's leaving in season 3.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to thank you for him. Then Dwight stops it. Who's ready to work?
Is that the same little boombox that he brings to Ryan's class? It's got to be.
It's got
to
be.
I hope so.
I haven't looked. That's got to be the same one. He loves that move. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Do we want to?
Yeah, I mean, Nellie's another one comes in season at the end of season 7 in the search committee time.
Mm-hmm.
She also comes in a way that makes you think that maybe she won't be a permanent character, but obviously she comes kind of makes her return in the Tallahassee arc. I guess, you know, she doesn't exert much of a presence on The Office until she comes back and takes Andy's job.
Right.
Yeah.
But when she does, it changes so much. You know, all these characters are responding to her because she's giving out these raises, and she's like, Angela. Doc Andy's pay, you know, until he has to get out of the office. And
I mean, I'm definitely noticing now two camps here where there's the characters who are introduced with a slow burn. They show up, they're kind of normal, and then it's revealed, you know, their quirks and all these things are revealed slowly. There's the people who just like burst in with, you know, and it's all on the table. Nellie is crazy.
Yeah.
Right out the gate.
Huge whopping penis.
Yeah, I mean, her interview is wild, and then everything that you know, comes after that.
Yeah.
Her normalcy almost comes out, you know, with time.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no one else like her in the cast.
Yep.
I mean, we again, refer to our Nellie episode for a full breakdown. But she only really has an entrance. I mean, she kind of... Her exit is with everyone else at the end of the show. So.
And she doesn't like have, outside of this managerial thing, where she clearly, you know, does a lot with Andy and with Robert, like, she doesn't have as much of an influence on the rest of the staff, so to speak. I mean, obviously,
Toby.
Yeah, Toby falls for her.
Yeah.
Right, I kissed that man. Yeah. And then also like as for Pam, as like one of Pam's friends. And then, you know, maybe that moment where Jim and they have to stop the party with why is Jim treating the magician poorly?
What a sentence.
You know, but Nellie doesn't have the same sort of and she has her own. I mean, like, we're going quickly over or through Nellie's contribution to the show. Mm-hmm. But she does have her own unique influence. And I think it's in Andy Green's book where, like, they have this great performer, but they talk about, like, some of the interviews say that they have this great performer in Catherine Tate, but it doesn't seem like they know what to do with her all the time within the audience.
Right. You know? They have so many great performers at once. Mm-hmm.
I do love the, and, like, you know, she, like, the thing about Nellie and Andy trying to fire her, and Nellie, I love when she says, the quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It blesseth who he gives, and he who takes. 'Tis mightiest and the mightiest. Don't you play the bard card. You know? And then Andy says, all right, you sly bastard, what can you start? So there is like some funny moments with Nellie for sure.
Very much.
No offense, but are there a lot of Irish people living around here?
Yes.
Oh, hate that.
I used to talk like this. Was you bloody horrendous?
Isn't it?
You know, every now and then, to go along with the theme of New Year's resolutions,
yeah.
I think about, you know, I'm sure many people listening, and, you know, how often does a New Year's resolution start running again?
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I go back to start running after, like, a break, I always think to myself that same Nellie quote where she's like, it's how I came to briefly drive an F1 car. Two of the slowest laps ever recorded. And I always want to make that like my Strava caption when I go for my first run back after a long time gone.
Yeah.
Two of the slowest laps ever recorded.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
That's another screw the teapot. Like, yeah. Show me that race.
Yeah.
She's like trying to merge.
Pete is that Clark? It? Oh, Pete and Clark.
Yeah.
Oh, do we have to? All right.
Well, we did Pete and Clark recently, or we talked
season
about
season 9. You know,
their intro. I mean, that's the thing, and not to diminish their characters, but as far it's as okay, like you making can. An entrance and like they don't have the same impact or splash maybe as some of these other characters because right. they come in as sort of this reset. Ryan right. and Kelly are gone. Gabe and Robert are now gone.
And they're so nakedly the new.
New Jim, new Jim Dwight.
Dwight.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it really does. I mean, their introduction is so quick with, it's like almost in the same breath as like, okay, we're losing these people and now we have some new people.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like, it almost just feels like the show just telling you like, okay, we have new people
there you go.
This season. Yeah, yep. yeah.
New stories.
There's no big story. Like, you don't see their interview process. You don't see any of that.
And right. it's funny too, a little bit how Pete... Then we talk about this notion of being Karen being relatable to Jim, relatable to the audience, or being one of the cool, quote unquote, people on staff. It's funny to think about that with Pete, where he comes in and Jim is asking him all about, sports and things, and like they can't connect on anything.
Yeah.
Tennis, boxing, Amazing Race. Yeah.
Good talk.
Yeah.
Talk. Yeah. The face Jim makes is so just like, wow, it's close. Mm-hmm. We're almost there.
He is the new Jim. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, we get their intro and it's more like, it's very funny because the episode is called New Guys, you know? But then the focus is really on Dwight slacklining, Dwight, trying to show you us how a real man walks across a flaccid cord. but then later he finds himself dangling from the, from above the parking lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, this is when we start in season one, like Jim and Dwight's relationship is already so established. They've been working together for years. You just can't recreate that with Pete and Clark. So yeah, their introduction feels more just like, oh yes. Okay. Here's some new meat for season 9. Mm-hmm. And literally for Jan, here's some new meat and Clark, there you go. And here's a new boyfriend for Erin, who's at least better than her last two. So great.
Very true.
Yeah.
Well, it's like in the way that Kelly and Ryan are sort of written off, like they're both written in. You know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
I'm going to be hanging out on the beach with Gloria Stefan
and
Dwayne Wade.
Right, right. There's such a clear void that they fill, and it's sort of like, okay, got it. You know, dust your hands off. Let's do season 9.
Yeah.
Speaking of dusting our hands off, conference room?
Let's do it.
Let's say we do.
All right, you know what? That's it. Conference room, 5 minutes.
All right. welcome to this conference room. Just a couple things. As we've already gone for quite a long time on this episode.
This is our last moments together.
Oh, yeah.
Physically in the stew. It's been really, really great.
Edwin flies back. We're in person again. Yeah.
Yeah. Edwin flies to Switzerland again.
Tomorrow. And then 2 weeks after that, going into a submersible, we're going to go check out the Titanic.
Oh, dear. What do you got on deck for the flight? You got any cool movies, cool shows?
Yeah, that's what I look up. That's my genre on Netflix that gets recommended to me. Cool movies.
Yeah. What was your Love Actually sentimental European dramas?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, what? Yeah.
Or something like that?
Yeah, it was so funny. Hold on.
Sentimental European comedy?
Yeah, whatever. It was funnier than that. Yeah. But no, it's nice to make the most of these last couple times that we have to record in person and just kind of enjoy it. But yeah.
And as 2024 revving its engine.
Sentimental
European comedies. We figured we'd kind of do the same, talk about ourselves and sort of things we want to leave in 2023 and things we want to embrace going forward. Yes. Before we do that really quick, I do want to share one email we got. Before we close the show, this is from Ruth in Kansas City. Who says, hi, MSPC. I'm a newish tot, and I joined after I made it through all your other episodes.
Wow.
And I found you guys at the beginning of 2023 and needed more. I just listened to the last episode of 2023 where you talk about IRL sightings of office actors. So I thought I'd send this over. So I'm going to skip a little bit here, but she went to an Office Ladies live show in Kansas City she took a trip from Kansas City to Toronto to see it back in September.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. She says, as I'm sitting there anxious and nervous in the sixth row of the auditorium, three guys sit down behind me, two with beards. I'm not thinking clearly and can only think of the one screenshot from one of your YouTube videos you posted on Instagram of what you guys look like. And I turn around and ask, are you guys the Michael Scott Podcast Company? Because, you know, why wouldn't you have traveled from around the world to be at their show? This was also before I'd caught up enough to know that Edwin had moved to Switzerland. Quote unquote, Alex says, what's that? Quote unquote, Sean then says, no, we're not that cool. And it turns out, quote unquote, Edwin had an accent, maybe French. So I could have just waited to hear them talk before looking like an idiot.
Sounds like he's cooler than me.
Jenna and Angela put on an amazing show, of course, and I may have cried a bit when they walked out. I got a picture with them afterwards, which she attached. Looks great. And I ran down to the stage where they finished. I should have gotten a picture with the fake MSPC.
That would have been cool.
I know. I would like to see that. I also went to an office trivia night with David Koechner. AKA Todd Packer in Kansas City last week. I went with my sister, who's maybe seen The Office once all the way through, but I said I could carry us for trivia. Her trivia team name, practically Kimishtanos.
Really?
From your ideas that you've thrown out.
So good.
I guess that was our idea. Nice. She got 7th place out of 74.
Wow.
That's really good.
Especially... Whoa. Carrying the team.
Isn't that great? Yeah, she says, I should have been third as I answered nervously on a couple and I answered wrong too quickly. Mm. So I'm going to say an honorary third place. Other trivia team names that night. Moe's and the Scarecrows. We were never given name. Love Fun it. Runners for The Cure. Tan all over, Jan all over.
Yeah.
Frozen Sprinkles. Pam Pam and her Pam Pams. And A Little Stitious.
Very good.
So there you go. She goes on to say, thank you. So much. Your podcast has been a true comfort over the last 4 years. We've grown so much. Congrats to Sean and Alex on your baby announcements.
Thank you.
How cool that they're so close. Mm-hmm. Also,
sweet
Sean.
Sweet baby's boinker.
Sean, to close the year out, can I get one last a limousine for the road?
A limousine?
Love you guys. Ruth in Kansas City.
Amazing.
Thank you, Ruth.
And awesome,
you guys,
Ruth.
Check out the pictures.
Dude, I'm jealous. Like, we should do stuff like that. a few people have mentioned the office con that's going on or coming up.
Let's wait till we have babies, then we can start doing all
that'll
that.
Be the perfect time.
That'll be easier.
Yeah. But that's super cool, and would love to meet the mysterious MSPC doppelgangers.
Yeah, hit us up. I mean, they didn't know what it was.
Hopefully they're listeners now.
I mean, I think Ruth is doing some guerrilla marketing here on the ground.
Clearly they like the office. Clearly they like podcasts.
At the Office Ladies show, talking about our show.
Come on.
I mean, come on. All right.
Ruth,
well,
thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Great email. Cool. Anyone else, send us your IRL stories.
I would love to hear.
We'll read them on air. How about some of our own resolutions?
Yeah, one thing I thought maybe that might be nice with talking about this theme of intros and exits is one thing we want to bring into this new year and one thing maybe you want to leave behind in 2023.
I'd like to leave in 2023 struggling to make one podcast and take into 2024 struggling to make two podcasts.
Yep. I thought about this earlier, and I thought, like, if you've ever wondered to yourself, do these guys have a Patreon? You'll be finding yourself wondering, do these guys have a second podcast where they talk more about movies?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
In all seriousness, I'm getting tired of TikTok. I think I'm gonna lose TikTok.
Good man, dude. Good man.
2023.
I'm thinking about
it. I haven't done it yet, but
I've been thinking about that with Instagram. I'm like,
yeah.
I don't like myself. I'm on there. I'm like, why am I? I hate everything I'm seeing. What am I doing?
Instagram's so ad heavy.
Yeah.
And TikTok, I'm just starting to realize, like, man, how many times am I gonna watch, like, just some person in their room talk to me about, like,
with one of like five songs at a time.
I think I need to the bite-sized content. I'm wary.
You want some entrees?
Yeah.
You want some entrees?
I'm gonna leave TikTok and I'm gonna pick up books in 2024
and full movies, dude. With our new show
and that was gonna be another thing. Just like turning on like random TV shows or like rewatching like TV shows and stuff like that. I'm excited to watch movies like in 2024.
Me too. Yeah. Good one. I said to leave in 2023, I'm going to leave excess unstructured time, which is something I've had in my life too much of. Now, part of this is obviously there. I have a child coming in June.
Mm-hmm.
If everything goes right. That's going to change my life. And I would not like to be playing catch up right from the get go, even though I know I will, as much as I prepare, nothing will prepare you for a child. So I hear,
so they say,
but I'm trying to have more of a schedule in my life than I have. I mean, working from home as a freelancer, it's very easy for that to become blurry. Mm-hmm. And, I figure with a kid, having a schedule really helps a lot. And so I'm trying to structure my time more. Now, does that mean I'll play less golf? No. Does that mean I will, you know, not play video games? No. I will do those things.
They will be structured
throughout the week. Yes. And then going into 2024, emergency preparedness. Now, I don't want to sound paranoid, but I watched a movie and then I saw a documentary and I just had a feeling of
behind.
I did see Leave the World Behind. But then there's been a ton of like huge waves hitting the coast through California and Oregon.
Sure.
Of just like coming in, and not that that's going to happen here, but we are in the subduction zone here in the Pacific Northwest, at least Sean and
that's
I are.
That's right. We got the big earthquake coming.
And I'm not a paranoid person, but I just was cleaning my garage and looking at my camping stuff. And I was like, I really, if something happened, I would not be prepared that well. So I'm just trying to just think about that in a larger sense. With the family coming, I would just like to be a little more responsible and have some things ready. Because do you remember when the pandemic hit, there was like 1 week, 2 weeks there when I went to the grocery store and it was like picked clean and I was like,
right.
Oh God, I am already behind. Like I'm already losing this. Like
there's
I'm gone.
No,
I'm dead.
Toilet paper. Yeah, now, and you're just right. Like, wait a minute.
I went to the bread aisle. There was just no bread. Mm-hmm. There was almost no rice. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is happening.
Yeah.
It didn't. It was okay. But I just, sometimes those things happen. And I just think I should, it doesn't take much.
I want to say a shout out to my friend. I think he sometimes listens to the show, Tyler Robinson, who he runs an escape room here in Portland called Shaky Grounds, which is at Oaks Park. And it is a emergency preparedness escape room that is
nice.
Really fun. Okay. Like it's not, I think that's, people hear that and it conjures up this educational like thing.
Right.
Like it is very fun and it is very good about making you aware of like, I mean, emergency preparedness, it has this kind of prepper vibe. It's like you almost imagine right. like you're building a bunker or something like that.
Yeah.
When it's really like, you know, you should have, you know, 5 gallons of water per person in the household.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, standing by.
Right.
Or there's like, I was just at Costco the other day and there was just some little kit that you could buy.
Yeah.
That was like, you know,
and that's all I'm talking
about. Like a bunch right. of food and stuff like
I'm
that.
I'm not talking about building the bunker.
Well, that's like with
crazy prepping. That's not just like basics.
Man, this is such a tangent we're on now. But like, yeah, like they say, like with when the earthquake hits, which
apparently
there's going to be a big one. It's like you need to be prepared for like a week of
right. no internet, like, no power.
Yeah.
Like, and just think if the internet went down or the grid goes down, it's just like, what could. Think about how much you just, I don't think in the last decade, it's just like, I don't realize how much I've just started to rely on all that. And it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like, I should just like keep a hand crank radio at least.
Yeah.
Like something, you know? So I'm just, that's something I'm doing this
that's
year.
That's our PSA, I guess.
There right? you go.
Yeah. More anxiety.
Yeah. Don't become an anxious, paranoid prepper. That's not what we're saying.
That's yeah.
Well, you're going to be like Dwight with, you're going to have to eat all that food in a few.
You're slurping yeah. pickled uh-huh. okra. Yeah, no right. time.
I laughed to myself when you were talking about that in like having the aisles picked clean. There's an episode of The Simpsons where they go through and the only thing left on the aisles is creamed eels. And wadded beef.
Wadded beef.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to eat that. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You know,
cool.
Refresh your batteries you have in storage. That's, mm-hmm. you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think maybe the one thing I kind of want to leave behind, I've been thinking about this a little bit because I was just, you know, I'm here in the United States for Christmas and I got to spend some time in Portland. I got to spend some time in LA recently, back in California, which was really amazing. Seeing friends and family, going to some of the old spots. All that's great. And I think the thing I kind of want to leave behind is kind of looking back on, you know, I look back a lot of my life in LA and I really missed it, you know. And I felt a little bit of the same. And when I was living in LA for that short period of time, I was thinking about Portland a little bit. I enjoyed living in LA, but I was also, you know, getting ready to maybe move to Switzerland. And I wasn't maybe present yeah. where I was.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God, you're moving back.
Huh? No. No. But I want to like...
All of us?
What I want to leave behind is kind of like thinking about this part of life that has already happened. Because like, I can't go back to that right. time living in LA. I can't go back to that time when I was living in Portland. Mm-hmm. Like, all of our lives are changing. These eras that I maybe am thinking about or that like I wish I could go back to, they're all moving targets. They're all moving all the time. So it's not like... And when I go back to LA, when I go back to Portland, I was like, oh, yeah, still here, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what I kind of want to leave behind that sort of like thinking in the past.
So yeah, you're getting rid of memories.
Yeah. Tomorrow, I won't know who you are. Yeah.
Deleting the hard drive. Yeah.
But
gone.
I think I know, you know what I mean? Like, kind of this living in the past, I guess, a little
sure.
bit.
Live in the present and the future.
Yeah, just kind of being mindful and present where I am. Because if I think back to that time in LA, I spent so much of that time preparing for getting ready to move to Switzerland, thinking about that versus like really just enjoying my time there, you know, which
right.
I wish I had
okay,
done a little
yeah,
more, a little more mindfully.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I kind of want to leave behind. That
be,
sort of
be more present.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then the thing that I want to add maybe is, you know, I think Sean, you touched on it really well, but like in the last week or so, I've had periods of time and maybe it's that time between Christmas and New Year's when you're just kind of hanging out and with your family, with your friends, kind of lazy days in between Christmas and New Year's. And I end up watching a lot of movies, right? I ended up watching a lot of movies. And what I want to bring in is just like more newer, fresher content to watch.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I'll keep watching The Office and some of these other things, but I'm so guilty of like just tapping back into a show that I've seen a million times or only listening to like content or podcasts that are kind of about sports or whatever, you know? And it's like, it's so nice and refreshing and energizing a little bit to like watch new movies, read more books, like listen to maybe a narrative podcast, engage with the music that comes out this year. I thought of it a bit when we did our, what is the best stuff that you saw with this year in our casual Thursdays where it's like, man, how much did I watch that came out this year? Like,
I know.
You know, and so I definitely want to engage with that a little bit more in the coming year. And that dovetails a bit with our new podcast, which you can check out. It's called Captive Audience. Like, listen, subscribe. No, just kidding. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at for this new year.
Right on. You guys want to end with favorite Thanksgiving sides?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we did it. I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Okay. Well, then in that case, if you want to call us and leave us a message, first of all, we'd love to hear.
We're about due for a voicemail episode.
Yeah, we'd love to hear, you know, maybe your ins and outs of 2023, 2024. So call us 503-694-9314. You can also email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. Check out our store, mspcstore.com. Join our Discord. The link is in the show notes. And then we're on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. Become Scott's Tot for $5 a month. Get your bonus mailbag episode. Get your main feed ad-free episodes.
And be prepared for emergencies. Get on Patreon, download all of our old mailbag episodes. Just have those ready for something to do when the power's out.
Record them to cassette.
Get them on analog. Yeah.
A portion of those funds go to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. Very special thanks to our Scott's Tots for supporting us. Special thanks to Kayla and Brianna for running our Discord. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who designs our artwork. This episode was recorded on location here in Portland, Oregon, USA.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. As we go into this new year, just know that we appreciate it more than ever that you're listening, supporting, liking, subscribing, emailing, voicemailing, whatever it is. We're just happy to have you here with us on the journey. So just a true appreciation for everyone who likes and listens to the show. Please make sure to leave a review or a rating for this show and or Captive Audience. It helps us, helps people find the show.
Helps the new show a ton.
Yeah, especially as we're getting Captive Audience off the ground. And a special thanks to those who've already done that.
Apple, Spotify, whatever you use, it's there.
Yeah.
Find it.
Really appreciate like the feedback we've gotten from people, some really thoughtful messages, some really kind things that people have said. Some people have left us reviews already, so thank you to those guys.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You're helping a lot.
We've been fortunate to build this little community around our show and now our shows, and we're just, I think, grateful for everyone who's a part of it. And as we go into this new year, we're really mindful of what we've built together and just appreciate everyone who's a part of it. So with that said, take care, stay safe, we'll see you next week.
Pippity Poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
Closing time. Every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end.
Good night.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.